Hello, everyone. Welcome to Awakening Together this morning as we join together, brothers and sisters in one body, and share a message that will hopefully raise us all up one step further. So thanks so much. It's time to greet everyone on the chat board. So go right ahead and do that.
We are awakening to the calling of the mystic. Awakening in the flowering of the heart. Everybody here melting into presence, overflowing effervescence, rising in love.
Thank you, Don, and thank you for muting and unmuting me. That's a great help. Okay, our purpose. We are an assembly of equals joined in common purpose, awakening to one true self within an appearance of many faiths, many cultures, and many symbols. We seek to discern one truth and to rest in its embrace. And today I'm going to share core value number 5. We accept all forms as temporary appearances permitted through enduring awareness of self. We live this value by honoring all appearances and all experiences while continually reflecting on changeless truth. So we have some announcements here I'll share with you. First announcement: a new consistent gentle healing year one group will begin on January the 27th and meet each Monday 8 p.m. to 10 p.m. Eastern Time, 6 p.m. to 8 p.m. Mountain Time in the Awakening Together Sanctuary. This group will be facilitated by Reverend Shauna Summers. The Gentle Healing curriculum guides committed students to make consistent, gentle progress toward genuine peace, joy, and love. Year one is based on a Course in Miracles workbook for students and other non-dual teachings. This group will meet weekly and will be committed to specific assignments and practices between group meetings. You do not need to register for this group. All you have to do is come. If you are already in a gentle healing group and feel that you have benefited from your participation, you may wish to consider inviting friends or family to participate by beginning with this new year one group. Number two, registration is now open for our self-inquiry retreat at the Retreat House in La Vida, which will happen on February 17th through the 21st. This retreat is based on the teachings of Indian sage Ramana Maharshi. At this retreat, you will learn the subtleties of self-inquiry. You will participate in guided self-inquiry, meditative self-inquiry, self-inquiry with a partner, journaling based on self-inquiry, and you will contemplate and discuss quotes from Ramana Maharshi. The purpose of this retreat is to help you make advances in the process of self-inquiry in a very short time. So when you go home from the retreat, you will be able to use self-inquiry more effectively to abide in the true self and detach from the false self. Each participant will receive a book of Ramana Maharshi's quotes about self-inquiry. The retreat is led by Regina Don Akers. For more information, please visit our website and look under Retreats and Classes, Retreats at the Retreat House. Number three, join us on Sunday, January the 26th, 2020 at 8 p.m. Eastern, 6 p.m. Mountain in the Awakening Together Sanctuary for a discussion of our January movie, The Nines, hosted by Reverend Jay McCormick. Join us on Sunday for a discussion of this unique three-chapter format mystery fantasy drama starring Ryan Reynolds as Gary and Hope Davis. In chapter one, entitled The Prisoner, Gary is a troubled actor under house arrest, living in another person's house because he burned his own house down. He becomes obsessed with seeing the number nine in everything, leading to an eventual breakout. Chapter two, entitled Reality TV, follows a TV writer on a journey through the creation of a TV drama called Knowing and his own obsession with the number nine and deeply spiritual revelations. Chapter three, entitled Knowing, focuses on a video game designer named Gabriel who had an unexpected car wreck while his wife notices on a video notices that Gavin, talking with a character from chapter one of the movie includes a surprise and deeply thoughtful ending. The movie is available on Amazon Prime, YouTube, iTunes, and Vudu. And you can also watch the movie with commentary by John Mark Stroud on his website, onewhoawakes.org. There is a play sheet available for the movie on our website under To Read AT News. Number four, join us tonight at 8 p.m. Eastern, 6 p.m. Mountain for a special program when Reverend Shauna Summers will interview Laura Bedford. Shauna is interviewing Laura because she is an inspiration living as a peace pilgrim in a way the world might think of as crazy. Laura had her first mystical experience in childhood that helped raise questions in her mind. Since 1992, she has been involved with learning and practices for enlightening to our true divine Christ nature. In 2015, Laura walked coast to coast to raise awareness that inner peace is our true divine Christ nature. Join us to discover how Laura embodies truth. And finally, number five, join us immediately following today's service for a 30-minute celebration for remembrance of Awakening Together member and friend Lynn Turner. Lynn passed away on Saturday, January the 11th, 2020 at 3:47 p.m. Eastern, as her family held the space for her safe and light-filled passage. Regina Don Akers spoke with Lynn shortly before her passing and will share her reflections about Lynn, her life, and her journey. We will also hear from others who want to honor Lynn with their remembrances of her. And that concludes our announcements. And so we have a song coming up. Thank you, Don. And let's share an invocation. Thank you, Father, for this opportunity to come together as one body for the common purpose of awakening to the one true self. Guide my words that we may each feel your presence and focus inwardly. Continue to inspire us to release our attachment to this illusionary world, that we may free ourselves from our belief in suffering and experience true peace for ourselves and all that is. Amen. Okay, our reading today will be from The Untethered Soul by Michael Singer. On the back cover, I just wanted to read one sentence here. What would it be like to be free from limitations and soar beyond your boundaries? And so our reader today is Susan Bacon. Thank you, Susan.
Thank you, George. The chapter 17 of The Untethered Soul that George asked me to read from is pretty wonderful. It is truly a great cosmic paradox that one of the best teachers in all of life turns out to be death. No person or situation could ever teach you as much as death has to teach you. While someone could tell you that you are not your body, death shows you. While someone could remind you of the insignificance of the things that you cling to, death takes them all away in a second. While people can teach you that men and women of all races are equal and that there is no difference between the rich and the poor, death instantly makes us all the same. The question is, are you going to wait until that last moment to let death be your teacher? The mere possibility of death has the power to teach us at any moment. A wise person realizes that at any moment they may breathe out and the breath may not come back in. It could happen any time, in any place, and your last breath is gone. You have to learn from this. A wise being completely and totally embraces the reality, the inevitability, and the unpredictability of death. Anytime you're having trouble with something, think of death. Let's say you're the jealous type and you can't stand anyone being close to your mate. Think about what will happen when you're no longer here. Is it really all that romantic that your loved one should live alone with no one to care for them? If you can get past your personal issues, you'll find that you want the person you love to be happy and to have a full and beautiful life. And since that is what you want for them, why are you bothering them now just for talking to someone? It shouldn't take death to challenge you to live at your highest level. Why wait until everything is taken from you before you learn to dig down deep inside yourself to reach your highest potential? A wise person affirms, if with one breath all of this can change, then I want to live at the highest level while I'm alive. I'm going to stop bothering the people I love. I'm going to live life from the deepest part of my being. This is the consciousness necessary for deep and meaningful relationships. Look how callous we get with our loved ones. We take it for granted that they're here and that they'll always continue to be there for us. What if they died? What if you died? What if you knew that this evening would be the last time you'd get to see them? Imagine that an angel comes down and tells you, straighten up your affairs. You will not awake from your sleep tonight. You're coming to me. Then you'd know that every person you see that day, you'd be seeing for the last time. How would you feel? How would you interact with them? Would you even bother with the little grudges and complaints you've been carrying around? How much love could you give the ones you love, knowing it would be the last time you'd get to be with them? Think about what it would be like if you lived like that, every moment, with everyone. Your life would be really different. You should contemplate this. Death is not a morbid thought. death is the greatest teacher in all of life. Take a moment to look at the things you think you need. Look at how much time and energy you put into various activities. Imagine if you knew you were going to die within a week or a month, how would that change things? Think honestly about what you would do with your last week. What a wonderful thought to contemplate. Then ponder this question. If that's really what you would do with your last week, what are you doing with the rest of your time? Wasting it? Throwing it away? Treating it like it's not something precious? What are you doing with life? That is what death asks you. Let's say you're living life with the thought of death, and the angel of death comes to you and says, "Come, it's time to go." You say, "But no, you're supposed to give me a warning so I can decide what I want to do with my last week. I'm supposed to get one more week." Do you know what death will say to you? He'll say, "My God, I gave you 52 weeks this past year alone, and look at all the other weeks I've given you. Why would you need one more? What did you do with all those?" If asked that, what are you going to say? How will you answer? "I wasn't paying attention. I didn't think it mattered." That's a pretty amazing thing to say about your life. Death is a great teacher. But who lives with that level of awareness? It doesn't matter what age you are. At any time, you could take a breath and there may never be another. It happens all the time to babies, to teenagers, to people in midlife, not just to the aged. One breath and they're gone. No one knows when their time will be, and that's not how it works. So, why not be bold enough to regularly reflect on how you would live that last week? If you were to ask this question of people who are truly awakened, they wouldn't have any problem answering you. Not a thing would change inside of them. Not a thought would cross their minds. If death were to come in an hour, if death were to come in a week, if death were to come in a year, they would live exactly the same as they're living now. There's not a single thing they carry inside of their hearts that they would rather be doing. In other words, they are living their lives fully. And they are not making compromises or playing games with themselves. You have to be willing to look at what it would be like if death were staring you in the face. Then you have to come to peace within yourself so that it doesn't make any difference whether it is or not. There is a story of a great yogi who said that every moment of his life, he felt as though a sword were suspended above his head by a spider web. He lived his life with the awareness that he was that close to death. You are that close to death. Every time you get in the car, every time you walk across the street, and every time you eat something, it could be the last thing you do. Do you realize that what you're doing at any moment is something that someone was doing when they died? Quote, "He died eating dinner. He died in a car accident 2 miles from his home. She died in a plane wreck on a trip to New York. He went to bed and never woke up," end quote. At some point, this is how it happened to somebody. No matter what you're doing, You can be sure somebody died that way.
Thank you so much, Susan. Perfectly read. You know, so death and dying, this is something that we all have in common. It's coming for each one of us. And yet, and in the reality, death is always staring us in the face. We're just not looking. You know, we're like children playing in the sandbox. Just think about your last week here. What did you do? Look over your life. You know, my awareness of death, my fear of death, started at an early age. When I was about 19, I was in the Air Force and assigned to the medical group and ended up as a lab technician. And one of our lessons was to go down and see an autopsy in progress. You know, you've all seen it on TV. Nobody passed out, but I can tell you, it's very sobering to see death in the flesh. And for months after that, I had these Stephen King kind of nightmares, you know, dead bodies animated, speaking to me, etc. So, that was not a comfortable feeling. And of course, working in the hospital, death is a common occurrence. Then when I was in my 30s, most of my life I've had an issue with acid reflux. You know, I've never really wanted to eat what I should eat. And one of the characteristics of acid reflux is when your esophagus gets irritated enough, you have chest pain. And I remember in my early 30s going to the emergency room, wondering if I was going to die that moment. The doctor told me, well, your heart's fine. I think that you're just suffering from anxiety, which I thought was incredible because I had a very boring job. I was actually driving when this happened. I don't have any stress in my life that I can really identify that's anything extraordinary. But, and here just lately, we found out about a month ago, my son has esophageal cancer. He has a cancerous tumor at the bottom of his esophagus. They're still testing it all, but he will go through chemo, radiation, and surgery starting next week or the week after. Cancer doctors don't seem to be in any hurry, and they think it's been growing for a long time, so, you know, a couple of more weeks or so is not going to be that big a deal, but it certainly brings it front and center. You know, most of us have had relatives pass, family members pass. You know, my mom and dad have both passed. But, you know, you kind of expect that as people age. Mom and dad were both in their 80s. My mom died suddenly in a car wreck at 83. Head-on collision that injured my dad and killed my mom. And, you know, I had no regrets. First of all, I knew my mother had no problem leaving this world. As a matter of fact, I felt her presence and the message that, hey, it's great. You know, she was developing Parkinson's and her limb shook and she just hated that. So I'm sure she saw that as a blessing. My dad lived to almost 90 and died. And yet he struggled in life. So, You know, it was almost a blessing to see him go. I hated to lose him. I love both of my parents deeply. And, you know, there's always a time when a person's had a full life and have medical issues and their quality of life is suffering that is sort of expected. But the reality is, regardless of where you are in life, what age you are in life, right, it's easier to accept when you're older, as Lynn just texted. It's coming. Michael Singer, in that book somewhere, wrote, death comes to most people unexpectedly. That's not to say that we don't think we're going to die, but at that moment of death, and as Susan read, there's people doing what you're doing right now, what I'm doing right now, that have keeled over. Doesn't matter what is going on, it happens. And so, you know, my wife and I were just talking this week, we need to update our wills, and she says, what if I die before you do? You're going to be in a real fix because you don't know where anything's at. And that's true. She is the organizer, and I really haven't really cared much to find out where all of our stuff is. And so that's something that needs to be sooner rather than later. So, you know, my neighbor just had a heart attack last week, mild heart attack, but he's just a few months younger than I am. He seems to be fine. He went to the hospital for a couple of days, but, you know, at 71, he is the oldest male in his lineage. Everybody else in his immediate lineage has died before age 70. So it's coming for us. And it's something that we need to keep front and center. So, and I thought this was, first of all, it's an easy read. It's very easy to understand. But Chapter 17, Contemplating Death. It's truly a great paradox that one of the best teachers in all of life turns out to be death. When someone tells you that you are not your body, death shows you. So to understand life, use the thought of death to help you focus. Death instantly makes us all the same, and truly, we are all the same. Now, there's absolutely nothing wrong. I don't think there's anything wrong with us being here in a body, having this experience of a life. But there's a time that is going to end, and what's going to end really is our egoic identification of who we are. You know, are we this body, this personality, this life? Or, if we look inward, are we spirit having an experience in this illusionary world of time and space? And of course, at Awakening Together, we believe that we are spirit. And, you know, it's time to wake up. We have a privilege that very few people in this world have currently or have had. We have the awareness. This is a great organization with great leaders that point us to awakened masters that are guiding us step by step. A wise person realizes that at any moment they may breathe out and their breath may not come back. So ready or not, here death comes. You know, we all have this dance with death. Anytime you're having trouble with something, think of death. Use the thought of death to help clarify the issues of life. You know, you think about what irritates you or even what makes you happy. It's all temporary. You know, if you have a significant other, it's not all beds of roses. My wife told me the other day, that she's glad to be married to me. And I said, well, I'm glad to be married to you because I'm not sure very many people would put up with me. I'm moody. And we have a doormat in Florida that says, here lives a grumpy old bear and his honey. So, you know, left to my own devices, I don't take care of myself as well as I should, and it helps to have someone that cares. So, you know, think about your loved one, your significant other. You know, I've got a book, I read it a long time ago. It's a Dr. Phil's book. It's called Relationship Rescue. When I left my last wife, you know, you always hear that you end up with someone that was just like the person you left. And I wanted to make sure that didn't happen. So Dr. Phil's Relationship Rescue, I read it cover to cover. As a matter of fact, Liz, my wife Liz, also read it cover to cover. But we had just gotten married, and she said, well, we're still on our honeymoon phase, so we need to come back to this later. We've had some issues, so I guess it's past due. But, you know, living together, being commonly committed, can be stressful. And, you know, we take them for granted in many instances. So the goal of this life is to be happy for yourself and for everyone, and that includes your spouses and your close friends and everyone around you. So a wise person affirms, if with one breath this can change, then I want to live at the highest level while I'm alive. You know, I just use my own life. I waste a lot of time. I'm retired. I don't have any excuse for not doing anything. It's just because I don't make it important. I can do anything I want, as long as it didn't cost too much money. So, you know, it's great to have a deep, meaningful relationship with your significant others, with your relatives, if that's possible. You know, some of your relatives won't allow that. So that's just the way it is. We all have them. You know, it's not like that ideal family is out there that never has any issues. So we've been contemplating death is the greatest teacher of all life. When we focus on this, it helps us put things into perspective. You know, it's coming. Beyond the shadow of a doubt, it's coming. And we can choose to bury our heads in the sand, and it comes upon us unexpectedly, Or we could also choose to awaken. And really, death is not so much death of the body as death of the personality, our egoic identification with who we are. And the awakened masters tell us that they have transcended that, even though they're still in bodily form, then they have transcended that. So, how are we doing time-wise? Okay, we got plenty of time. All right. Let's say you're living life without the thought of death, and the angel of death comes to you and says, it's time. Well, begin with the end in mind. You know, you've heard this before. Begin with the end in mind. So regardless of what's happened in the past, today is the first day of the rest of this life. So start now. Don't worry about what happened, what didn't happen. Start now. And if we focus every day on the gold, it will help us get to that point where we have the courage to voluntarily lay this personality aside. You know, it's just one of those things. We can voluntarily do it, or it'll be done for us. Now, you have to be willing to look at what it would be like if death were staring you in the face. Well, it always is. So what is the payoff by focusing on death or the awakening to self? And so that in the seven steps to awakening, quote 1111 says, the bodies have an end, but the self, the infinite consciousness, is eternal. 1113, sorrow ceases. So this is what happens when you awaken. Sorrow ceases. All bondages are rent asunder and doubts are dispelled when one is fully established in the equanimity of the self for a long time, when the perception of division has ceased, and when there is the experience of fullness through the knowledge of that which is to be known. What is to be known? It is the self, which is pure, which is of the nature of pure consciousness, and which is omnipresent and eternal. I'm going to share with you from the Bible, the parable of the rich man. And it goes like this. Jesus was teaching, and they were asking questions, and he shared this parable with them. The ground of a certain rich man yielded an abundant harvest. He thought to himself, what shall I do? There is no place to store my crops. And then he said, this is what I'll do. I'll tear down my barns and build bigger ones, and there I will store my surplus grain. I'll say to myself, you have plenty of grain laid up for many years. Take life easy. Eat, drink, and be merry. But God said to him, you fool, this very night your life will be demanded from you. Then who will get what you have prepared for yourself? This is how it will be when whoever stores up things for themselves but is not rich toward God. So, you know, that's a sobering lesson. You know, it's we are one of the fortunate countries in the world where people have the ability to accumulate assets so that they can cut back their work or not work at all in their old age, if you're lucky enough to live that long. You know, I had to think, I chuckled when this 1% movement was going on. You think about it, there's not a single person in the United States, even if they're homeless living under a bridge, that is really not part of that 1% of lucky people in this world. You know, it's not a matter of assets, but many of us have assets. But we have to be good stewards of it. You know, it takes a lifetime to accumulate, and it can be gone. But on the other hand, it's nice to be able to leave your heirs something. That's great. But most importantly is that you are managing those assets. So, I'm going to go to the Manual for Teachers, and A Course in Miracles. You know, I studied A Course in Miracles for many years. I didn't really read the Manual for Teachers when I started because I didn't see myself as a teacher. I thought, well, that's for, you know, that's for those special folks that are ministers or, you know, lay people who dedicate themselves to their church. So I didn't read the Manual for Teachers until the very last. And of course, by the time I had been studying it a few years, I realized that we're all teachers. So we are all teachers. And so they have a section here called What is Death? And since we have plenty of time left, I'm going to share this. Death is the central dream from which all illusions stem. It is not madness to think of life as being born, aging, losing vitality, and dying in the end. Oh, let me, that's a question. Is it not madness to think of life as being born, aging, losing vitality, and dying in the end? We have asked this question before, but now we need to consider it more carefully. It is the one fixed, unchangeable belief of the world that all things in it are born only to die. This is regarded as the way of nature, not to be raised to question, but to be accepted as the natural law of life. The cyclically changing and unsure, the undependable and unsteady, waxing and waning in a certain way upon a certain path, all this is taken as the will of God. And no one asks if a benign creator could do this. In this perception of the universe as God created it, it would be impossible to think of him as loving. For who has decreed that all things pass away, ending in dust and disappointment and despair, can be but feared? He holds your little life in his hand, but by a thread, ready to break it off without regret or care, perhaps today. Or if he waits, yet the ending remains certain. Who loves such a God? Who knows not love because he has denied that life is real? Death has become life's symbol. His world is now a battleground where the contradiction reigns and opposes and opposites makes endless wars, and where there is death, peace is impossible. Death is the symbol of fear of God. I don't think we can blame God for the creation of the universe, at least not absolute God. I don't think the universe is a mistake. The Course calls it a tiny mad idea. And yet, all things are perfect. We're here because, in some level, somehow, we chose to be here. We chose everything that has happened to us in this life for some purpose. And as the Tao Te Ching says, with the pendulum, if we swing the pendulum too far in one direction, then we get the equal and opposite reaction in the other direction. So we're not victims here. We've chosen this. We've created this, not on a level that we have any understanding, but from a spiritual standpoint. I call it the Holy Spirit. The Holy Spirit is that aspect of God to me that is here in time and space. And that is the truth of who we are. So, we don't have anybody to blame except ourselves. There's nothing to blame. We just have to see things differently. So death is a symbol of the fear of God. And when we can drop the fear of death, we can drop the fear of God. And so the next page says, he did not make death because he did not make fear. Both are equally meaningless to him. And as I said in meditation, most of the time I get thoughts running through my mind that came from who knows where. Video images, little stories, little vignettes. And this life is sort of like that. It's not real. It's an illusion that we have created on some level. It's like an elaborate video game, a holodeck. And we have chosen to participate by blinding ourselves from the awareness of truth. So, that's a great point, I believe. The last to be overcome will be death. And really, death and fear are synonymous to me. But if you choose the idea of death, then there is no world. And, the ascended masters, many of them will tell you they do not see a world. They interact with it, but they do not see the world. All dreams will end with this one. This is salvation's final goal, the end of all illusions, and in death are all illusions born. God is, and in him, all things created must be eternal. So, you know, the fact that we know that the universe had a beginning, and looks like it will have an end. You know, we talked about the awareness game of expansion and contraction, and I compared that to the Big Bang. And yet, within each one of us is that Big Bang. You know, we chose to experience birth. We expanded into that illusion of self. And at death, we go back to the truth of self. So we've expanded into the illusion, and we will contract back into the self. So, and I'll share one last paragraph here, and we'll be done. Teacher of God, and each one of you are teachers of God. Your one assignment could be stated thus: accept no compromise in which death plays a part. Do not believe in cruelty, nor let attack conceal the truth from you. What seems to die has been but misperceived and carried to illusion. Now it becomes your task to let the illusion be carried to the truth. Be steadfast in this. Be not deceived by reality, in quotes, of any changing form. Truth neither moves nor wavers nor sinks down to death and dissolution. And what is the end of death? Nothing but this: the realization that the Son of God, that's each one of us, the Son of God, in this oneness, is guiltless now and forever, nothing but this. But do not let yourself forget, it is not less than this. And so I hope this message has been helpful to you as we are on this journey to awaken together. I know it's something that came to my mind with the circumstances currently going on in our own family. And it's something that I needed to hear, and I hope that was useful for you too. I will drop the mic. Thank you so much.
Spend all your time waiting for that second chance, for a break that would make it okay. There's always some reason to feel not good enough, and it's hard at the end of the day. I need some distraction. Maybe I'll find
Thanks so much, Don. And I'm going to invite anyone who would like to share to go ahead and share. First of all, Awakening Together does rely upon your donations, and Don has just posted the ways to donate under www.awakeningtogether.org/donate. So we appreciate your support. Financially, as well as your participation. So, is there anyone that would like to share?
You hear me?
Yes.
I'm Sharon. You're amazing. You know, I'm just sitting here crying, and it's beautiful tears of joy and appropriate for today, as we are having a memorial for a very special lady. And when you have a loved one, as you do, have a child, and I also have one too, that has an illness that can be life-threatening, you get to look through different eyes about death. And I think that that is really what I want for myself. I want for myself that I will meet death with love and courage and desire, because I'm truly more than this Sharon self. I am the being, you know, the one self. And your clarity and the way you spoke was so magnificent. I love hearing your voice. You're a gentle soul. Thank you so much. Thank you.
Thank you, Sharon. That we are truly one body. We're here to support one another. And you know, these are words that might be difficult for other people that are outside of our circle to hear. And yet, it's a universal message. So, anyone else? If not, Don has another song queued up here. So, Shauna, go ahead.
Thank you, George. That was such a wonderful message, a timely message. And it brought to mind a retreat earlier last year where, sorry, my voice is funny. Regina took us to a cemetery within walking distance of the retreat house. And she was asking us to do this very thing, to contemplate if this was our last day, how would we treat each other? And she took my hand because I was sitting right next to her, and she looked right into my eyes and asked that question. How would you treat everyone at this table if this was your last day? So thank you for reminding me that, because the small irritations, the small upsets, the believing my mind is not what I want to do on my last day. Thank you, George. I love you.
Shauna, that was beautiful. I felt your heart. And I felt the power of that moment where Regina's reaching for your hand. And wow, thank you for sharing that. I think that is a beautiful summation of this beautiful sharing. Thank you, George. Thank you, George, for stepping up and helping out in all the ways you do. We appreciate you and we love you.
Thanks, Don, and thanks, Shauna. And, you know, the other thing that comes to mind is, you know, the value of these retreats. If you haven't managed to go to Lobita, take the time. You'll be glad you did.
Don't be mad if I cry. It just hurts so bad sometimes. 'Cause every day it's sinking in. World off your shoulders now. I'm dreaming of the day when I'm finally there with you. Save a place for me. Save a place for me. I'll be there soon. I'll be there soon.
Okay, we've got a couple of minutes left. I think Ruby had something she wanted to say. Go ahead, Ruby.
I was hoping you didn't see my hand. I was trying to get out of it because I'm so emotional. That was a wonderful reading by Susan, and a wonderful message by you, George. And I just want to share one thing, because I have five different things I'd like to share. But the one thing that comes up first is that when I had a stroke when I was 38, I had this tumor on my carotid artery, and it had grown very slowly. And so the surgery was pretty significant and a difficult surgery, because they had to cut out part of my carotid artery, but it caused me to have a stroke. And it took away my ability to short-term memory and my ability to intellectualize or to think, actually to think. And of course, I didn't think that that was a gift. I thought that was a curse, and I wanted to be the way I was before. But it led, when I woke up from the surgery, I had four things that came to my mind, and I scribbled them. The one thing was to accept myself the way I am, to accept others the way they are, to treat my body as a temple of God, and to live life to the fullest. Don't take life for granted. Don't take life for granted and live it to the fullest. So, of course, I've been going through this whole thing, and that was like 20, 30 years ago I had that stroke. And each time in my life of going through Regina's, dealing this with Regina, it's become a deeper message, a deeper, deeper message. Live life to the fullest. You just said it in chapter 17 of what's his name? The message from, the Untethered Soul. It said he was explaining that living life to the fullest, this is my message for me, it could be for you too, is to awaken, to be fully awakened, to live life to the fullest. And I remember hearing that, or reading that in NTI, somewhere towards the end. It was either in the last chapters of NTI, but I couldn't remember where I had read it. And of course, the third thing was to, treat my body as a temple of God. Of course, I thought that meant to exercise and, be healthy and eat healthy. But the deeper lesson was to treat your body as a temple of God, was to be empty, to be silent. So I got that from a couple of years ago from the NTI of the message. So the only one thing I'd like to add to that story, my son took his life, and I remember that day very, very vividly. Because what was on my mind before he took his life was discontent with him. We were at a dinner at my ex-husband's house, and my son-in-law was there. My daughter's husband was there. And my son was there too. And I was just thinking, why can't my son be like my son-in-law? And that was in my mind. He was suffering from depression, and I had no idea about depression. And I said, why can't he be like my son-in-law? In my mind. And I said, he was depressed, but I said, he could get over it. He can get over it. And not even 2 hours later, he committed suicide. So I didn't feel guilt or remorse for that moment, because the lesson at that particular time for me was my son didn't appreciate who he was. He, just a week before he died, I was helping him with his resume. And he did not think he was worth anything. He was saying, oh, nobody's gonna hire me. I hadn't had many job experiences. He was deanless in college. He was funny as hell. He was beautiful, very polite, and everybody loved him. And I'm looking at this, my son, saying, where does he get this from? But that's who I was. I honestly didn't appreciate myself. All the things he was saying about himself was what I was saying about myself. So 2 weeks later, he commits a suicide. My lesson from his suicide was to love myself, to believe that I am the best thing that ever can happen. Because he clearly didn't love himself or appreciate himself. And that's not what I was seeing. My lesson today with George is, if I could have not had that discontent of him or myself, wouldn't that be lovely? Wouldn't that be lovely? This is what I'm here for, to live life to the fullest and to be awakened, to live it from awakening state. And I have the opportunity, like George said, with having these awakened people teach me and having all of you guys to be partners with me. So thank you very much, George, for that message. And I'm giving up the mic.